Hello, I'm Andy Seeley. I teach for the University of Maryland University College in Europe. University of Maryland has a 19 degree granting institutions throughout the state, and one of them is the University College that's dedicated to teaching adult learners. So if you're ever down in Maryland, you go to College Park where the football team is, you go down the hill, and that's where UMUC University College is. There's a stateside division, a Pacific division, and a European division. The overseas divisions, the charter is teaching to the troops. So we've been in Europe for about 60 years. I've been an adjunct instructor there for about 10 years. I'm based out of Tampa, Florida, but because my day job is as a defense contractor for the United States Central Command, that encompasses the area that the European Division of University of Maryland covers. So you kind of almost need a map on the wall to be able to draw the points to see why it is that I'm associated with a school in the States that teaches in Europe to troops that are in the Middle East. There will be a test afterwards. I'm an instructor, for crying out loud. So that's what I do. I teach for the University of Maryland in Europe. Right now, I'm teaching Java programming almost exclusively because that's where their need is. But in the over the last 10 years, I've taught everything from introduction to office automation to advanced programming, system administration, Unix topics, things like that. And that, so that's my academic background.
Our next contestant.
Hello, everyone. My name is Kyrre Begnum. I'm from Oslo and Akershus University College of Applied Sciences. I don't expect you to remember that. What's so special about us is we do a master's program in system and network administration. We've been doing that since 2003. It's a master's degree that we work together with the University of Oslo in providing. It's very exciting to be part of that. We get computer science students, engineering students that want to take a master's in this field. And it's also an international program, so everything is in English, and you're all free to apply.
Hello, my name is Guy Hembroff. I'm from Michigan Tech University, and as you can see, I'm wearing a suit. That's why you know it's my first LISA conference. Thank you. Thank you very much. My background is, a lot of it's in network engineering, security engineering, do a lot of pen testing for consulting, and then I kind of transferred into the academic area. I have a program, we started one 7 years old now. It's Computer Network Systems Administration, and it's based on a lot of systems administration, but we also do a lot of security, we do a lot of network engineering, that we have a lot of VoIP engineering, things like that, that we deal with. That we have in it. And so we've incorporated that into the type of curriculum that we have. And I think one thing about our curriculum, and I'm sure like a lot of the panel here in terms of what we have, and I think one thing that keeps us apart from other universities is that we have such a heavy focus on theoretical with the actual applied. And I think coming from industry, that's probably the biggest thing that I saw was missing in terms of doing it. So we have, for example, we have 22 core courses, 21 of them have associated labs with it. So if you're in my security course, you do something with learn about man in the middle or buffer overflow, you go directly into the labs and do the same thing. And I think that's where we're seeing a lot of the retention with the students and more of an understanding that they have with it. And I'm also a Leo and like long walks on the beach. I think that's pretty much it. So I'll give it to Steve.
I'm Steve Van Dievender. I primarily work at the University of Oregon as a system administrator, but for about 12 years now, I've taught a 8-week summer session course for our computer science department on system administration. I call it Introduction to System Administration because, you know, how much can you really cover in 8 weeks? You know, and so it's kind of, you know, compared to the other panelists, I feel like I have sort of the most modest, you know, involvement, you know. Our computer science department is sort of one of the traditional theoretically oriented ones. And so I'm sort of just happy that I can get them to even do one course on something so practical. That was even the department head's reaction when I first proposed the course was, oh, that would be too practical. She claimed she was joking later, but I wasn't sure, you know, it wasn't obvious at the time. It's certainly something where I don't tell students that, you know, you're going to come out of here being a qualified sysadmin. I tell them, you know, you're going to come out of here knowing some of the major issues in system administration.
So if you're listening, you'll hear four totally different approaches to educating possible sysadmins. And Steve, don't underestimate what you're doing. You're introducing people to system administration, which might make them then go further and try to get a full degree in system administration.
Well, I hope eventually that's what the department will do. And if I was a full-time educator in the department, that's kind of what I'd be pushing for.
And so the other thing you may not know about some of these guys, two of them were working very heavily on the education workshop, Steve and Andy. Andy actually was the, Andy was doing another workshop. Kira was chairing the workshop, and Steve was at the workshop. So it's not just that they teach, they're also interested in how to make this better, and what are the issues that we're facing to educate sysadmins. So that's kind of what we'd like to hear from you guys in the audience. Does anybody have any questions you want to throw at the panel? And if you do, please go to the mic so we can hear the questions. And while I'm waiting for all of you to run to the mic at once, so I didn't get a degree in system administration. Like a lot of the people in the room, I'm going to guess, from the surveying I've done here at LISA, I just sort of tripped one day and fell, and when I stood up, I was a sysadmin. So how are you making it possible that someone can get a degree or a formal education in something that's so hands-on and practical and requires such a degree of root cause analysis and analytical troubleshooting? I mean, can you really teach that? Or do you have to have the right type of person that just naturally falls into that? Can someone answer that?
Yeah, I think it's from both of it. I think when you see students come in, if they have different types of skills that you're looking for, just like it would be for CS or mechanical engineering or any other type of program that you have, there's certain types of traits that you look at in terms that for the students. And I think problem solving, I would say, is probably the biggest one that you have. Mm-hmm. Because with systems administration or network engineering, whatever you want to actually label it in terms of what they're doing, it's an evolution. It's always changing different types of things. And I think as educators, that's the biggest challenge that you have, is that you're actually educating the individuals to solve problems not only now, but 5 years from now as well and beyond. And I think a lot of educators get so wrapped up in this is the latest release of this or this is the latest version of this, and they go ahead and just focus on that part of it. And when the student gets out, instead of really knowing about how the software works or the application that they're dealing with, it's more of click next, go to next, next. And then when the actual application changes, they struggle with different things like that. So I think making sure that the student, if they have a level of problem solving already, I think that's one thing that you're looking at. I think there's a lot of other things that, you know, a lot of people feel that systems administration is not so math oriented, but when you have a lot of different things in terms of security for risk management, different types of assessment, probabilities,
encryption,
different things like that that you have, deterministic values like that are very important, and those things need to be stressed for students incoming. On the same token, you know, we've seen where we've had, especially for security, I would say hands down is the biggest one. People with experience with that coming in are usually the hardest to teach because they normally have learned it incorrectly at some point. And you get students who are in high school and they thought that they've done some hacking or different things like that, and they get into your course and they're doing a lot of things where they would set off alarms or different things like that. And so they have a hard time removing that barrier that they've learned and then transitioning that into something else. So if you take somebody, like we've had several students who had no knowledge coming in for security, and they do absolutely wonderful in the course, where other ones come in with this inherent knowledge, and it's very hard to turn that perception around if it was incorrectly learned in the first place.
Kira, you're nodding. You agree? You have something to add?
Yeah, we see the same thing when we get students. So from a, let's say from a marketing perspective, if I'm trying to sell this degree to potential students, I don't go after one particular type. I would say that most of the people who are here and, you know, the LISA crowd at large, that there are a lot of people that are, you know, they like to tinker with stuff and they're problem solvers and they like to play. I consider myself one of them, but, you know, I'd like other people to take the masters as well, and they oftentimes do excellent. You know, I'd like people to take a master's in system administration not because they want to become one, because they want to do become a manager, right? And they just want to have just more insights. Mm. So in many respects, you know, we care more about the topic than, you know, people who want to become a sysadmin, even though, you know, the majority probably want to become a sysadmin. But so we just try to keep a broader perspective. I don't want to rule anyone out, but we observe the same thing, that people that come with a lot of baggage, like practitioners, mm-hmm. they sometimes have a problem, you know, following that particular route that we set for them in a course, because, you know, they've probably done something similar and perhaps they think it's a little bit too mundane. But then again, when they get the finals and they have to answer those questions, you know, they weren't exactly prepared for that particular route. So we observe the same phenomena. We really do. But
it's like such a different way of thinking, because sysadmins, you know, there's more than one way to skin a cat, and we all have the right answer, right? We all know the right way to do it, and there's 50 ways to do it.
Yes, and sometimes we ask for that particular type of discussion and evaluation in the student. Sometimes we just want the answer that's in the textbook. It's, you know, we want to differentiate at some points. But yeah, in traditional education, you know, we expect the student to want to take our class because it's about that particular topic. So they study math because they're interested in math. We don't care what they want to do with that math later. We just want to teach them this math because it's awesome. And the same thing with system administration, I think, to some degree. We have a lot of interesting, cool topics that we think everyone should know because they're just so great.
Sounds like a sysadmin.
Yes, and if they want to become a sysadmin, they'll probably be a very good sysadmin, you know. But other than that, they're really awesome topics. Everyone should take them.
Right, Andy.
I'd ask a question of the audience, because you're all here. You've self-selected to come here. You could be here for, you know, you could be any place else, but you're here. So you're interested in system administration as a teachable topic. So my question to you is it a topic worth teaching? Because none of us in this room, or very few, I would propose, have a degree in system administration. I've been a professional system administrator for going on 2 decades, and my degree is in computer science, and that's been very successful for me. But is it worth teaching?
I saw 3 hands. What?
What do you think? Yes, no, up, down? Everybody think it's worth teaching?
Teachable?
So, given that you think that it's worth teaching, let me talk against my friend Kira here and say,
yes,
maybe it's not worth teaching, because this is the start of the commodification of the task of system administration. What makes me a great system administrator, presuming that I am, is not the computer science classes that I took, it's the art history classes that I took, the literature classes that I took, all the things that were out of band that forced me to think in different ways. So now I'm creative, and that's something that I think that if you poll sysadmins, what's your greatest skill? My creativity, not my ability to write a shell script. It's my ability to write a shell script creatively.
So are we creating cookie cutter admins?
If we teach system administrator in system administration, are we commodifying that task and filtering out the creativity? That's my question to you.
Okay, we have a question.
So I may have missed this at the beginning. I'm sorry, I was a couple minutes late. I'm not sure what your system administration courses cover. So that would be cool information to know. And as for creativity, I'm not convinced that we do enough engineering, right? Too many times we're too busy being heroes. We shouldn't be, right? Build it right once, works, go home. Don't want to be paid, don't want to know better.
So let's see. The way I organize my course, or sort of what I do with my course, because it's just a very short course, and there's no way I could cover all the topics in system administration, is I sort of intentionally designed it to be accessible even to people who weren't necessarily wanting to become system administrators, but who, you know, could at least get through the course, you know, do the projects, and sort of get an idea of what it was like, you know, maybe just to find out, ooh, this is hard, I don't want to do it, but at least they would understand the issues when they came out. And as, you know, certainly my position on whether it's worth teaching, Elizabeth Zwicky gave a pretty good talk here a few years ago based on her experiences on teaching naval undergraduates about computer security and system administration. And basically her position was that, yes, it's worth teaching in the sense that, you know, I've heard people say, oh, you know, like, first, you know, either there are people who learn how to be good sysadmins on their own and get it, and then there are just people who won't. And, you know, her position, which I agree with, is that, you know, the purpose of most education is to get, they're the people who will study any subject on their own and be good at it. They're the people who might not be as motivated to fully learn everything on their own, but if you give them that educational opportunity, they can become good at it. And then there are the people who may just never be inherently good at it. But you can basically get the people who could be good at it, but maybe aren't quite as motivated to become as good as the people who studied on their own and were motivated by it.
That's a good point. We all learn differently. So some of us learn by pictures, and some of us read man pages, and some of us go to a course or read a book. There's not one way to learn something. Oh, we have a question.
So I might be a little bit biased because my degree's in meteorology, but it seems like a lot of the best sysadmins I know, you know, like we were saying, maybe aren't from a, you know, sysadmin background, but they have a degree in domain sciences. You know, obviously out in the private sector, you know, if you have a degree in business or, you know, whatever industry you happen to be working in, that could be beneficial. So what about system administration as a minor instead of a major?
Kira's on the hook.
Thought you wanted to.
All right. I don't mind. So there are a lot of bachelor degrees that also deal with system administration. So that exists. And in Norway, I can at least, I at least know of two. Actually, none of them at our college. And they do successful. I think with a master's, you have the ability to go a little bit deeper in the research field and you can add cool stuff such as statistics and data analysis and so on, which you usually don't have time to cover if you do this on the bachelor level. I'm sorry, I'm not really familiar with the minor or major part, so I don't really know the amount of work that goes into either, but yeah, it's on a master's level, you can just go deeper and you could try to also recruit future scientists and researchers in the field, which I think the field needs. So, yeah.
There's also the option to double major. You can also always major in two things. If you're really interested in this and system administration, you can do both. I know people who double major. There's some overlap usually.
Yeah, we have, within our program, we have a lot with, you know, we have computer engineering, CS, even MIS, and some of the other ones. Even you would see there's audio visual. There's now a four-year degree in that in terms of having it. So we do have a lot. It's primarily with CS where we see a lot of double major, but we do have the minor as well. And it's kind of surprising because we have a lot of people who are in physics, chemistry, things like that, that are majoring in those particular areas, and they also have a minor in systems administration. So we do see that, and we have seen already the results of that is where, for example, we've had a student who graduated in physics 2 years ago, couldn't find a job, and is now working at Barracuda doing systems administration and also some security stuff. So.
Alexei?
That actually leads into my question was, I was curious how many of your graduates are working as sysadmins, and also how, if there are any of them are present here at LISA.
Asking me?
Anybody
who cares to answer?
And Guy, I think.
Actually, this is a question I'm very happy to answer. Almost all of them work as sysadmins today. This is, I'm speaking for the Norwegian market, of course. They don't have any problems finding a job. And also, if you want to have the more of a student perspective, Matt Disney, who is a regular here, he's one of our graduates. So you could poke him at some point. Also, we usually bring a contingent of students with us to this conference, and they usually work at handing out tutorials or in the registration desk and so on. So you can also ask them how they feel about it and their relevance. And this is an international program, so we get students from all over the world.
Matt Disney is a good person to talk to because he did
yes.
the master's program.
I just wanted to add that even in my case, like actually several of my current and former coworkers are people who went through my class and then went on to get jobs, you know, in the same department, you know, the same Central Information Services department that I work in. And that a lot of my other students have gone on to get other jobs, outside jobs in system administration. So even for just doing a single course, I've been really happy with the number of people it's apparently inspired to want to go on to become system administrators.
That's good. We're growing the profession. I want to put Andy on the spot because you're teaching the troops. Is that so? How is this preparing them for when they get out of the military?
So to answer your question as well, I have no idea, because my students are well. It's at the moment purely distance education for me since I've moved out of Europe. I don't teach in the classroom, so I very rarely meet a student. I teach undergraduate, so usually I've got a freshman or a sophomore level CS1, CS2, those types of classes, and then the students move on. My average student is probably in the mid late 30s. Probably has been in the military for 10 years, 15 years, and is trying to finish a degree before they separate the military. So the background for my students is usually they've got a job as an enlisted member, And now that they're about to retire, and they're going to be 40 years old, retired out of the military, and now what do I do? Mm. And they want to look at that. So my regular job as a defense contractor, I'm also a hiring manager, and so I hire system administrators. And I always, so I talk to young troops as well, and I say, and I tell them what I look for in a resume. And there's three things that I look for: is your education, your experience, and your industry certifications, because that's what contracting companies are looking for. Your education says that you can set a long-term goal and you can hit it and you can meet other people's arbitrary requirements, and you've learned something that you wouldn't have ordinarily learned, as opposed to a trade school, right? And your experience says that even without that education, you've been able to do a task and meet a job, and then your certification means that you're able to meet specific minimum standards. So if you've got something in all of those, then you're hireable. Every now and then I hear from a student that's about to get out saying job reference this and that, but I really don't know where they end up. Okay. Other than the fact that I'm sure that they end up in pretty good shape because they're hitting those marks.
Because you were their teacher.
Well, I'd like to think so, but I'm a contributor. Yeah. And this is something where I'm at a complete disadvantage from Kira and from Guy and to a certain extent from Steve as well, is I only see him once. I have had very few repeat performers, and usually because they flunk the first time, and Oops. Then they come back. But I teach CS1 and sometimes CS2. Mm. So I might see them twice, and then they're out the door, and then they contact later. And for our meteorologist friend, the answer to your question is, depends on which way the wind blows.
Oh. He's the comic relief. We have a question.
So... There's a lot of skill and experience involved in good system administration. I think that that teaching it, it's like a lot of other things. I mean, there are some parts that you can teach rotely, things that are rules of thumb to follow. The person has to have some innate ability to do things like have a good memory for things in order to be able to troubleshoot, for example. But I think it's most important teaching it in terms of advancing system administration as a science and not just as a bunch of ad hoc procedures that people now we all know that you know. It's nice to have a science underlying everything, and then you get into the workplace and most of your science goes out the window because sites are all different.
Well, it's a profession. It's a profession. We want to advance the profession somehow, and just having us fall into it doesn't give us any way to know whether the profession can advance.
Well, I don't think it can advance as much as a profession if it's not accepted, if there aren't foundations to it that are not computer science, but that are system administration. I mean...
Look, a microphone.
Yeah, grab it.
I mean, Mark writes about this all the time, right? It has to be something that has underpinnings that people learn, and that doesn't make them cookie cutter.
Well, that leads me to a question. Let me grab this
for a safety net.
So how are the two degree programs here perceived within your universities? Are they seen as science, or are they seen as sort of this technician kind of thing?
First of all, on behalf of the technician kind of things,
not to denigrate technicians, but is it seen as science?
Well, we had this discussion in the workshop. I don't think we need the theory of system administration in order to successfully have a master's program in it. I believe much more strongly that it is a profession. I like to compare it to, say, nursing, for instance. It is a profession which is highly linked to the success of our society and the civilization. And even though it contains a lot of theoretical knowledge, which is necessary, it does also cover procedures, and it does cover high awareness and professional identity. And I think that as a system administrator, I think it fits very well. And in order to sell that point, I don't need an underlying foundation. Also, you know, I don't need the support from, say, the math department
or
the physical physicist department. And I'll tell you why. It's because we graduate more students than any of them in percentage, and we get more applications than any of them. So, you know, the way that the college university system works, if you're being effective and efficient in making new graduates, you know, you're doing great.
I think it's because system administration is more fun than those other degrees.
You know, that's one thing that a lot of students find out. You know, we just work a lot about motivating them and showing them the really cool stuff.
They get to touch things. It's hands-on, lab work,
well,
right?
They get to touch a lot of things. I don't think I should get into that, but... no, but seriously, I don't think that we need a underlying, even though theory, even though I really like the pursuit of looking for it, and this field needs to find much more of an identity, of course. But in terms of running a program in it, I don't feel the need for it.
I want to hear from Guy, because I know Guy comes from an engineering school. He comes from my alma mater. And I know when I was there, computer science was the only way. And now you have a lot more options. So.
Yeah, I think it's probably the easiest way to do it is that when the program first started, when we started this in 2005, basically, it started, and the stigma was that it's with the School of Technology. It's strictly a technical program, and it's not very engineering or science related in terms of that we had for it. And I think the easiest way to transition that or to change it is basically, you know, number one is what kind of research, because Michigan Tech, as you know, is a heavy research school
yep.
that we have. So our faculty are heavily embedded with research as well as doing stuff like consulting and things like that. So that's one aspect. And then the other thing is that immediately, where are your students going? And I think where your students going, if you want to start marking it up or benchmarking to computer science, computer engineering, those type of things, we have, in terms of our growth rate, we're the highest in terms of those three programs that we have over the last 5 years. The other aspect is that our salary base that we have for our students is right there, if not higher, on a lot of the ones when compared to CS or CE. Even mechanical engineering, we've beaten them a lot in terms of what we had for us. So, a lot of our students, it's not just systems administration. I don't want that to be, you know, maybe the misperception in terms of what we have. We have a lot of our students who get e-commerce developers, security interface specialists, different types of things that they have, network engineers, in addition to systems administration. But that all comes from the degree itself. And the perception at Michigan Tech has changed 180 degrees just because of where our students are going. Nothing that the faculty are doing. It's really what the students have been doing and showing as they go into the field.
Lee?
So first I want to address your question of should it be taught. I can turn out one or two apprentices a year. That doesn't scale.
No.
And while many of my apprentices have gone on to become sysadmins on their own, many of them haven't. So we do need a way to scale much better. The flip side to that is a lot of universities, a lot of colleges are now doing 5 or 6 or 7 informatics degrees or iSchool degrees, or there's a lot of watered down kind of sort of sysadmin-ish. You can go run a website, but not do a lot else. And I would like to see, on the research side, a lot more research into what is system administration, so that the undergraduate programs can focus on generating a good, broad level knowledge of how to be a sysadmin. Because we need a lot more undergraduate programs. Master's degrees are great. I think it's fantastic. I'd love to get one someday. If you ever do a professional master's, let me know. But in terms of day-to-day sysadmin, we need a lot more trained, skilled people who have, you know, a co-op part of their undergraduate degree where they go out and do real sysadmin with real people for a while and then go back and study more of the theory. It needs to be a balanced program. And so I'd like to see some more research, master's level, PhD level, into what is system administration so that we can then get the undergraduate programs rolling and more unified theory, as it were, across all the schools that are teaching it, instead of having this patchwork of, oh, you went to Brown, oh, you went to BYU or whatever, and you got this different concept of system administration.
So you want them to work together?
Yes.
Ooh. Can you guys do that?
Well,
we just met.
Yeah, they did just meet. That's kind of unfair.
Yeah. I mean,
we could fix that. The mall right there.
I certainly think that there's definitely sort of a tension, and there's long been a tension between, you know, is there a theory of system administration, you know, and what can you teach in terms of principles versus having this really strong practical component of, well, to really learn system administration, you also sort of need to just get your hands dirty and you know, mess up a couple of machines and you know, just do sort of basic stuff. I would have to say, as an educator, I'm much more interested in teaching the principles than I am just running people through specific rote tasks, and I kind of organize my class that way. You know, it's very sort of goals and results oriented. I make the somewhat unconventional choice of letting my students choose which operating system they're going to install, well, from the subset of freely available Unix and Linux implementations.
Anything as long as it's Linux?
What?
Anything as long as it's Linux?
No. I actually, FreeBSD, no, OpenBSD have been, you know, frequent choices. One student group did Open Darwin 1 year. You know, it's sort of like if you can make the assignments work with the OS, you know, even students who, nobody's tried to do it yet, but if somebody came along and said, I really, really want to do this on Windows, well, okay, you just have to be able to do all the assignments, you know, and that, as far as I know, that should be possible.
I think that's cool because you're getting to actually play with the stuff outside.
Yeah,
of the classroom.
So basically, like, you know, my lectures are mainly, you know, here are principles and background, and here is an assignment where now you have to get your hands dirty and make this happen.
Question?
Well, my question's basically just been answered, but I'll ask it again anyway.
Okay.
I was wondering what you people who do teach systems administration are teaching, because all of the courses I've seen in this area have focused on user ad and knowing all of the options on your Cisco, that sort of thing. I think a systems administration degree should overlap insanely much with a computer science degree.
Oh, yeah.
So what are you teaching? What modules do you guys have?
Okay, somebody grab the microphone.
You
Peter.
Want courses?
Guy.
Sure.
Okay.
I'd be fascinated.
Okay, so a lot of the courses that we have deal with, we have a lot of the administration courses. We have network administration 1 and 2 that we deal with. We're asked every year if we want to be, you know, go into the Cisco Academy and things like that, and we don't do that. Other ones have found success in terms of doing that. We don't do that because we use Fujitsu, Juniper. We have a whole bunch of them that we actually incorporate, so we don't want to have, you know, basically be, you know, pigeonholed into one particular type. So we have network administration 1, 2. We have network engineering. We have VoIP engineering. We have Unix, Linux administration 1, 2. We have Microsoft administration 1, 2. We have lightweight directory access protocol, LDAP class that we deal with. We have programming courses that we have for it. Web server courses, storage area networks that we use with EMC, Clarion, some HP, different ones that we run with those as well. Database administration courses that we deal with. That's kind of the bulk of what we have. We also have, of course, all the security courses, and we do make them take cyber ethics their first year before they get into the security courses and things like that, because that's it's amazing the stuff that you'll hear, just the constant things. I think now that I've progressed past that point, not that I was bad before, but I think in terms of piracy and things like that, some students, especially coming from high school into the program, they are just really clueless in terms of what types of consequences or things can be done against them and the company that they're associated with for the different types of things, copyright infringement, all those different types of things that we go over. So when they get to the security courses, where we do a lot of attacks and things like that, there are a lot more I guess, experience in terms of that, and it makes things a lot easier.
Don't try this at home.
Do you think it's possible? I'm sorry to interrupt.
Peter was nodding a lot, so is that a plus one for the answer? You have similar?
Go ahead. Yes, we have bigger classes or bigger modules, so we touch upon many of those topics. I was just writing down the list of courses that we have. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So we have 11 courses that deal with some sysadmin-related topic or another. And we have two courses, sysadmin 1 and 2, that deal specifically with the profession of system administration, where we try to help them, you know, think like a sysadmin. But we also have an ethics course that's mandatory, and a research course. I'm teaching a scripting course. And also a infrastructure lab class. And then they also have a thesis at the end. So we get pretty deep into the material. And we also have the standard networking stuff, which is Cisco related, but we also don't do the Cisco Academy thing.
That's really cool. That was my question, thinking like a sysadmin, like assuming that the worst thing will happen and being ready for it, that sort of thing.
Yeah, the problem with those particular classes, there is no literature for this.
Right.
So if anyone would like, so the closest book we have, I think, on thinking like a sysadmin is Tom Limoncelli's book. So that one's, because it brings a lot of added insights. And also Eileen's Essential System Administration, and also Mark's two books. That even though they're slightly focused more on technical or analytical aspects, they give nuggets of wisdom here and there, but it's harder to build a course around it itself. So we badly need that.
Cool.
Thank you very much.
Next question, we got a whole line here.
Hello. I'm very interested to see a gentleman who, on the end, who teaches people who are not sort of coming up students. They have a lot of life experience and so on. I work in a commercial web services online environment where we have a very agile development style, which automatically means you have to have a lot of troubleshooting skills. And when we hire people, we find that even if they have previous experience, if it was in a more procedural kind of environment or a much larger environment with a more tightly defined job role, then they have poor troubleshooting skills. And I completely agree with the comments that troubleshooting skills is the most important thing, analytical and troubleshooting. So do you have any suggestions on how I can, in the workplace, teach and transmit better troubleshooting skills to people to improve their life there?
When I first started teaching, I was always worried that a student would have a question I couldn't answer. And one of my faculty mentors told me, what you do in that case, you just say, that's a great topic for extra credit. And then I push it right back at them. You've got me on the spot. And to teach troubleshooting, that's the challenge here, right? Is that you can't teach troubleshooting because it's not a thing. It's a way of thinking. And so how do we teach a way of thinking? Well, and that's why, even though I've taught plenty of system administration classes and teaching computer science classes now, I've never been able to really, I can teach you how to do a for loop. I can teach you how to write a basic shell script to do a specific thing, but I can't teach you to do something that I've never seen. And that's what you're saying is, you want to have a body, a new person come in and give them a problem they've never seen and have them have a product, a solution out of that. That's a fundamental challenge here is we can't codify that. I can teach someone to program in Java, say, and I can teach them all the fundamental data structures and data flows, give them an assignment that they've never seen, and they can apply those basic skills. Can we do that with system administration where we haven't codified what those skills are? So I don't know, but what I want to do is continue that conversation with you after. You know,
panel.
Like let's trade emails and such like that.
Panel, do you agree that it's not something that's teachable?
No.
Kira?
Yeah.
All right, so I think it is teachable. I think that there's the field of problem analysis that gives us some tools. I think it's expensive to teach in terms of time and resources, and it's a highly unpredictable process. It's a lot like leading the camel to the water, but you kind of force it to drink kind of thing. Eileen Frisch was at our college and she taught one of the courses. She made an exercise, or she had a habit of debugging the student's problem. So if a student had a problem in lab, she would like take over and type at the keyboard, and they would see what she was doing, and she would do it like a think aloud exercise. I think it's close to like an apprentice mentor thing for a while. So for those students who were ready, right, they would then follow her and learn how she thinks and, you know, the kind of conclusion she draws from the output that she gets. So I think that's a way to do it, especially if you're in a group where you have senior and juniors, you can practice this think aloud methodology and have a heightened awareness of how the senior ones debug, because it's a lot of intuition, I think. So you just need to be aware of it.
So your question was, just to make sure that I understand it correctly, was that how do you in industry be able to train on different types of troubleshooting skills, is that correct, or is it with strictly academia?
No, this is in a commercial environment where people are doing a day-to-day operations job.
Right.
How can I teach and improve their troubleshooting skills so I don't sort of have a course setting of here are some assignments, here's an exam.
Right.
It's more of a how do I continually improve them.
Okay, and I would just say in terms of what, from consulting and what I've seen, that we try to replicate actually what industry is doing, is that a lot of organizations, what they've done is use virtualization to their advantage. Everybody's using it in terms of doing it, but there's a lot that you can do in terms of it, whether your organization is financial sector, whatever that you have for it, different types of issues that have been done over the last 6 months to a year, things like that you can replicate, because a lot of them that we deal with, that been able to replicate obviously all the different operating systems you can replicate, Cisco routers you can replicate, call centers, all those different types of things that you have, to actually put that in a form, like a sandbox, that's done for it. And it's not only for just certifications for different types of training for that, but also things that apply to your sector or your particular business that you have for it. And I guess what we've seen in terms of having this is that once they've started to go ahead and do this, it's the actual individual that's sitting down who's supposed to be the apprentice in terms of doing it is actually doing a lot of the documentation as it comes out. And what they're doing is that documentation then leads into policy that they have for future things that kind of cross that line that they deal with. So I guess my suggestion is just that if you're looking at different ways to do that, really start looking at incorporating the virtual environment into having it, and then letting that particular person, you know, go over a certain type of scenario, and then let them take it a step further in terms of doing it. We've seen that time and time again, and now it's become such a refined process that really anything that comes out, it's just like zero-day exploits. You can't really prepare for those as much, but you need to have a process in place to have it done. It's the same type of thing where it's a continuous thing where the people who are in your organization get used to being able to work on different things. They really start to get into it. And if you have it more of a welcome thing to inherit knowledge rather than something that if this happens, we're going to panic and this is what you need to know, that's usually a lot more beneficial for them. But that's what we've seen, and we've actually taken that and replicated a lot of that in academia to look at what's the latest hack exploits, things like that, put it into the virtual environment, have them figure out different types of things in a sandbox and kind of go from there.
You could do that. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
And I think that kind of, I would say some similar things in that, I mean, you can't easily teach all of the troubleshooting skills just by talking at students, but you can put them in an environment where they get to exercise troubleshooting skills, you know, just by giving them simple, you know, say simple but progressively harder problems to solve, and giving them some guidance on just how to think about and how to break down those problems. I mean, you know, how do they teach problem solving in math and physics? Well, a lot of it is you get homework and you have to solve problems, and they give you progressively harder problems to solve. You know, and actually, like in my case, the only other teaching experience I had before I got into teaching my class was in teaching adaptive skiing to people. And it's another case where you can't teach it by talking at them. You know, you can't, you know, you have to get them out there and just get them to do it. But set them up to succeed by giving them simple things to do and then letting them go through it. You know, and basically there are things where if you can't teach it, you just have to be good at giving people an environment where they can be successful at learning themselves.
That kind of supports the gentleman who said having a multicultural background and different things gives you creativity. So teaching the skiing, the adaptive skiing, kind of gives you the creativity to develop a sysadmin course.
Thanks.
Tom?
Hi, Tom Limoncelli, Google New York. I have a bunch of things to say. So Carolyn, just cut me off when you get bored of me speaking. When I went to school, if you were a Spanish major, the introduction to Spanish classes didn't count towards your major. And I was always very impressed by that because I think a system administration class should come with some expectations that you've gotten some training already. I know we're not there yet, and actually, now let me argue against that point. I think there's so much to learn in system administration that it would be hard to do that. But really what I wanted to talk about is the importance of standardization. I would love for people that are educating system administrators or future system administrators to get together and work on some educational standards. There are three different nonprofits that I work with, all three of which have talked about wanting to be the first to set these standards, but they don't have the people to do it. So I'd really like to encourage you to talk to me afterwards about potentially doing something like that. What do we want out of your graduates? As I'm not officially speaking for Google, but I know what I would like. I would like a beginner that is well-informed and has the potential to become an expert professional. And related to that, I think by graduation, for all the aspects of system administration, they should know three things. Who invented that? what the current wisdom is and what the cutting edge thoughts on that aspect are. And I think that's for all academic professions. Sadly, I can't name, I couldn't build a grid of and fill in that chart, but it would be great if we could.
We tried doing that.
And lastly, I wanted to, and just on the you can't teach debugging, there's additive, subtractive, introspective, and data flow analysis. And so you can teach those four general things and then do case studies after that. And that's what I believe Christine and I did in our book. So lastly, I was really shocked when people started saying, maybe we don't need to teach system administration because, and I would like to impress upon everyone how important this is. Society's starting to realize how important return on investment is, and they're starting to look at the birth to death life cycle of things, and operations is so important in business, but also it's important in life. I work in Manhattan. Manhattan, if all the bridges and tunnels were shut down, has a 3-day food supply. And I can't cook or get Chinese takeout without the computers that did the logistics to get that food to Manhattan. And every aspect of our life is like that. And system administrators aren't the janitors of the data world. We're the architects, and we are what make all of this happen. And I think it's not just important that we have system administrators that are just astute, wonderful professionals, but I believe it's a moral imperative. And I want to thank you for the teaching that you do, because that is making that next generation of people. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom. Let's get some more questions. We have a line.
Hi, Daniel Matuszek from Swisscom. We're talking a lot about technical, analytical skills, and I'm working in a company by myself, looking for people, and I see a lot of time we have people with strong technical skills where other things are missing. So
soft skills?
Yeah.
I was waiting for someone to bring that up. Good.
So communication, a bit of understanding for the business. So, and I want to see what you could do to improve this.
I can just start with that. That's a problem that's inherent everywhere. It's international, global issue that you deal with for it. Our students, like I'm sure many of the programs here, they take the business courses as well, so there's project management, different ones like that. One thing that we do a little bit different than computer science or the rest of them is because you do have that classification that somebody's very strong technically but can't articulate that to somebody who's not maybe as technical. So we have almost every one of our courses have associated projects in them. With those projects, they have to do a presentation. But I think the most important part is in their senior year, they do a senior research project. It goes both semesters, so it's 9 months long that they have for it. Almost every single one of these, except, for example, like one I can remember was worm propagation and distribution. That one's not going to be probably associated with industry, but all the rest of them are. And so we deal with, Los Alamos National Lab is here, where they have people here. We've done one with them, hospitals, pen tests, things like that. So our students get embedded in terms of working with industry for doing that. So they have to do budgets. They have to do all the different types of classifications for return on investment, all those things with it. They have to communicate with them. We also make them present once a month. And what we do with this is we give them, the way to get students there, as you guys probably know, is just give pizza and pop. So we do once a month at night. We have them do it, and it's business casual, leading all the way up to the 9th month where they do their final oral defense, which is business formal. That they'll be having, but we record every single one of them. We immediately give them feedback, and then it's streamed out to them within 24 hours. So when they do that, you get a lot of them who are looking at the slides or who don't have any type of hand gestures. They're just and very soft-spoken, things like that. That doesn't play well in terms of doing it. And I can just tell you from not anything with our program, but just as students go through this, I can give you one example. We had one of our students last year. Who went and he interviewed out on Covisint, which is a subsidiary of CompuWare, which is in Detroit. They do a lot of healthcare software applications, things like that. What companies are doing now is they're going ahead and taking these people from these different universities. They have them come in, they're interviewing them over a 2-day period. At this location, the first day they're there, they each get a different software application. They have to present on that software application the next day. And so what he did in terms of doing it, he was with 10 other, 9 other students that were there for the position. They each had 12 minutes to present. He went for 7 minutes and they stopped him. And he had no idea why. So after the presentation, they had him come into the room and he asked him, why did you stop me? They said, we've never had anybody articulate so well in terms of what they were giving just the day before. And he said that it's all because of going over that time and time again. And we played back his very first one that he did. And there was a lot of, you know, the communication was down, different things like that. So those are ways that people who are very strong technically but weak with different types of verbal skills or different things that they have for presentations, even written skills, you see that a lot. I mean, you look at any type of programmer and you look at the actual grammatical errors that are in it. I mean, it's unbelievable. So when they're writing different types of executive summaries, things like that, you need to make sure that they're sharp in terms of those areas. So that's what we try to focus on in terms of having it.
I know, I believe pretty strongly that some, you know, communication and collaboration skills are really important for a sysadmin, and so I intentionally designed some things into my course to sort of give students practice with that and emphasize it. One of them is that I make them all work in groups. I mean, and actually I found that basically like just 2 people is enough. In fact, like 3 or 4 people is sometimes too many, just because then you start running into more of the group, you know, sort of group problems. But, you know, and so like their first assignment is that they have to install an OS on their lab computer, but the way they do that is one of them installs the OS and writes a document on how he or she installed it, hands it to his or her partner, who then has to use that document to do another installation and, you know, try to go back and forth, you know, until they feel they've converged on something good. And what I want out of the assignment is that installation document and not just, you know, the OS installation on their computer. You know, I make them, you know, I have students just give, like, I have several discussion sort of things in the class where each group has to discuss briefly, like, what they did for an assignment. You know, my user account creation assignment actually requires everyone in the class to communicate with each other. And even though every year I emphasize this assignment is more about communication than about creating the accounts, you know, there's always like at least one group who kind of doesn't do very well simply because they didn't communicate, and everybody sort of sees that. So,
yeah, I think technical communication skills are extremely important for sysadmin. That's my opinion, not as a panelist, but it's nice to hear that you guys are addressing some of those things, because as a really technical person, when you have to go brief management, you have to talk about technical topics. You can't talk technical because they don't get it, and you have to be able to communicate effectively with them. Did you want to say anything? Did your program address soft skills and how?
not to the extent Guy does. That sounds amazing. We have a lot of presentations and so on throughout the years, but we don't have such an emphasis on technique and so on like they do. But I think also it's a cultural thing in the culture of European education don't necessarily emphasize on those soft skills in their educational track. So there's no particular courses in it. Also, there's no particular like business aspect.
But you do use Tom's book, which has a lot of really good insight. So that's
yes.
A plus.
I'd like to have Tom do a presentation technique class too. So that would also help.
But, see, you don't start working with them. Right? You want to work with them. You'll pay, right?
Okay, thank you.
Hello, I'm Kos. I'm also at Google. I have 2 questions. The first, someone already asked you what textbooks you use. I'm curious if you have in mind any tech-specific books you wish existed, but nobody's written yet.
Didn't you say, Kuta, there was no book for something earlier?
Yeah, what was that? no, there's, like, if you would compare this to other professions, I'm taking nurses again, or perhaps teaching, they have a lot of material of what it is to be, say, a nurse or a teacher and so on. We don't really have that, like a course so full of it that you could build a course around it. Not just it's here and there, but like really a wealth of material I don't have it. I haven't seen it, even though there is a lot of material that deals with the business aspects of IT management. But that's not what we are looking for. So I miss that. I really do. I'd love to have a class in it. So we can't because we don't have sufficient material.
I think in the keynote today, we heard about all the business books that nobody reads. They just skim.
Yeah.
So we're maybe missing something in between that you would actually want to read.
Well, there was the book like The Visible Ops. I heard. I will check that out. You know, some, but you know, there's a you know, it has to be of a certain format to work out as a textbook in a class, so that means probably some researcher or teacher needs to write this. So they're usually many years in the making. But I think this is connected to the identity crisis of system administration as a profession. I don't feel there's a very good, you know, community consensus of what it is. It is to be a sysadmin, mostly because a lot of people are sysadmins but didn't educate as one because there hardly is a lot of education. So I think, you know, this all waits for a regulation to come in and make it like this. And then you'll see a lot of, you know, programs pop up that follow exactly that line, and then we will have a lot of textbooks. And you know, the community should probably play a part in dictating how that regulation should look like.
You want to write a book? Is that what you asked?
In my copious free time.
Oh, sure.
My other question, I liked your nurse analogy. It tempted me to ask, well, what's your residency program like? But then I was thinking about it, and I realized, where I went to college, I learned a lot about radio because we had a real radio station with real-world listeners dealing with the FCC and real radio companies and record companies. And there were people who learned how to be EMTs on campus because they ran an emergency medical service and they responded to actual injuries. And it strikes me that I wonder what you think about the balance between taking your students and sending them off to one by one to some company to work with them versus actually having your program run a service. And you even have computer science students, so you might even work with your developers.
Anybody want to address that? I see a lot of...
I haven't talked for a bit.
Yes, Andy.
That's a great idea. Now, for me personally, for my school, we don't have the continuity with the students to be able to achieve that. But something that I do with my classes is I got a new one yesterday. There's drop boxes here, right? And drop boxes saying we're hiring. So I went last night because I'm always interested in what my next job's going to be. And I looked at dropbox.com/jobs. They had some jobs listed, and they said, are you up to the challenge? And had, did any of y'all see that, right? There's like three little programming assignments on there. So next term, my CS1 class is going to have some extra credit. And that's going to be go solve the Dropbox challenges. And other things that I've done is offer as extra credit or as an incentive, go find a SourceForge project and volunteer for it. So there's, without that practicum that you're describing, all we're doing is teaching people how to read a book and not necessarily able to recognize the problems in front of them. So I think that's a brilliant idea, and I'm going to back you on that. The nursing analogy is tops. That's going to be coming home with me for sure.
I mean, I want to hear from others, but part of what I had in mind is when we were at a radio station, a lot of us had the experience of being called in the middle of the night because the transmitter was out or the next DJ didn't show up. I'd love to be able to hire sysadmins who in their schooling have had the experience of dealing with a site down at an unexpected time where it actually mattered because people used it.
And that's actually, I want to kind of put Guy on the spot, because when I was at Michigan Tech, that's exactly how I learned. The students ran the campus network. Because as soon as it went from the IBM mainframe to the Solaris Sun workstations and whatnot came in, the staff didn't know how to do that. It was the students who were like, oh, look at this cool thing, Unix, la la la. And all of a sudden it was the student body that knew how to do it, and they started getting hired to do it, even as students. So could your students run your program?
Yeah, that's why our bandwidth is always the best for our program and everybody else on campus. But yeah, that's what we do. So we do a lot of co-ops and internships that we deal with, and we have, you know, there's a lot of them at like Harley-Davidson, Ford, Los Alamos, things like that. They get tremendous experience, whether if it's systems administration, you know, in terms of Windows, Linux, whatever that they have. But in terms of that, I mean, we have, it's called ResNet that we have here at Michigan Tech University. And they do all different types of things for that. So they do the administration stuff, they do the storage, they do the virtual, many different types of positions that they have. But another thing that we've seen now is we also have, it's more of a rural area where Michigan Tech is located. And there's the school district itself. There's 24 different sites, and it's centrally managed. Well, it's centrally managed in the same town that Michigan Tech resides. So all of our students run a 24-hour help desk, and then they also do all the things for certain projects that they run as well. So they give it where sophomores are paid $15, $16 for juniors, and $17 for seniors that they have for it. And they're all project-related, but they're also with help desk features. So, you know, we have students come in, they're just tired sometimes. It's like, wow, what happens? Like, I'm running the teleconferencing, for them, and it was at 3 a.m. that they had to do different types of teleconference for it, or things went down and they got paged on different things. So it's really good experience for them. They get paid for it, and, every job is honorable that you can have, but if you can do something that's in your field that you really get some good benefit from. And I think probably the most important thing from the student is that we see students who say, I definitely want to do security, and that's the only thing I want to do. And they go into a co-op or internship and do that, and they're like, they come out 3 weeks later, and no. I want to do systems administration in this area. So I think once you get out of school and you start getting that comfort zone, if you have a family, different types of things like that, it becomes harder to switch. And so this is a good experience for them for that as well.
I'll just leave one last comment, which is the lack of continuity seems like an advantage because they have to document.
Right. Hi, David Nolan. I work for RIBA. I'm also doing a lot of stuff at the conference here. But I wanted to address the troubleshooting question, the idea of learning troubleshooting. Ariba is a software company. We sell a lot of customer support contracts every year, so we have a huge customer support team. That team gets formal troubleshooting training. And troubleshooting is troubleshooting no matter what technology you're working in. Turns out the customer support team reports to the same VP as IT, and the decision was made that we were going to take that same troubleshooting training and apply it across IT as well.
It worked.
And as a senior guy going into that training, I was trying to resist being negative about it, thinking I'm not going to learn anything. And what I actually came out of it was not so much new techniques, but a formalization of those techniques, and more importantly, a knowledge of how the other members of IT were going to be doing the same things, because a lot of them needed the troubleshooting training.
Best practices.
And by now having that formal 10-step process, et cetera, for troubleshooting training and some terminology around these things, now I can start thinking in terms of, okay, how can I make my documentation accessible to the help desk? And it makes the help desk better, right? Because now they're asking the right questions of the users before they report it back to tier two, tier three. So I think there's a lot of value there. And by the way, on the topic of residency, I think the help desk is a perfect place for that, because you need to actually interface with the end users and see how they report a problem to be able to really understand what's going on, I think.
Remember, we want them to become sysadmins also afterwards, so.
I have a question on that though, Guy. And anybody else who wants to respond to this, if your student is up all night because they respond to a help desk ticket, and then they come in the next day and they fail their exam, can they say, I was up all night troubleshooting some problem, can I retake the exam?
Yeah, but then it gets overworked in terms of that,
oh,
too.
I bet. I would totally use that.
Yeah.
But I used to do that. I mean, not do that thing, but I was a full part-time sysadmin, full-time student, and I remember hitting that exact thing where 3 a.m. in the morning, you're still working on something, the next day you go take an exam, and it's like, oh, my God.
Did you pass?
I did. I graduated. I have a degree. Yes.
And by the way, I just want to mention the troubleshooting process that we use that I actually really liked once I was willing to go through the training. You can get it at troubleshooters.com. There's a lot of it that's free, and then there's some licensed stuff. But it was a pretty good process. Our customer support team seems to really like it, and IT seems to have become a believer, and we're starting to see that adoption.
Sysadmins kind of struggle with that kind of thing. Like, I don't have formal training. I know what to do.
Yeah, particularly the senior guys. But if you've got a lot of junior and middle level, and you kind of explain this is one of the ways you become senior,
is to
get better in those things and understand, okay, it's not just about how do you troubleshoot it, but how can I improve the environment such that the troubleshooting is easier?
Yeah, that sometimes works. Thank you.
Carolyn?
Alexi? Oh, what?
I wanted to respond on, since I'm the guy that said that, well, we can't teach troubleshooting. What I meant was contextually, to say, like, is this something that we can have in a college class format? Because obviously we can teach we can have a flow chart of, you know, here's a problem and we can follow it through. And Dave, I'm taking a note on troubleshooters.com because that does sound really, really interesting. But I'm being a little bit contrary to say, well, we can't just have a sysadmin troubleshooting class because it's not well-bounded.
We also have a new extra challenge these guys don't have. You have distance learning.
Well, for me in particular, yeah. Absolutely. But it, to say, you know, when I say, oh, troubleshooting, you know, that is a mindset, not a skill, what I mean is that I can't personally envision a three-semester hour Monday and Wednesday from 10 to 2, here's a sysadmin troubleshooting class that's going to scale or that's going to be appropriate in a lot of different ways, but an OJT sort of approach to that where there is a boundary, and that boundary that is circumscribed around your actual work, I can see that being very very practical. And while I'm at it, when I said that we shouldn't teach system administration, I didn't really mean it quite so literally, Tom. Oh, absolutely. And my intent with that, since I'm responding to being contrary, was intending to be contrary, to say, this is a common argument that I've had with my fellow faculty, what's the difference between a college degree and a trade school diploma? And we've got significant overlap in the sysadmin field between those two concepts. Maybe it doesn't matter. But if I had a Microsoft certified systems engineer, which is an immense amount of work, how does that differentiate me from a guy with a bachelor's degree in system administration? Yeah. Are they the same thing?
Right.
That's a question that has not been shaken out here. And that's why when I say, well, maybe we shouldn't teach this, what I mean is maybe we shouldn't teach this as a degree, but maybe we should, but it needs to be teased out.
Steve wants.
Well, I know that the standard academic response to what's the difference between, say, a bachelor's degree and a trade school, you know, certificate is that, you know, a typical university education essentially requires you to not just be focused on one particular thing. I mean, you may major, you know, like I majored in computer science, but I was required to take a whole lot of other classes in English and history and archaeology and linguistics and such. You know, basically, they require you to, you know, broaden your education intentionally, and, you know, rather than, say, just focus on learning a particular set of skills. And certainly the way they also want to differentiate it is, you know, well, we're trying to teach you how to think and learn on your own rather than just train you to do a specific kind of task. You know, and hopefully there are trade schools that at least give you a little more than just, you know, here's how to boot a Windows machine, now you're an MCSE or whatever, but... I'm not saying that MCSEs have that low level, and certainly one of the things I remember in one of the education workshops was this one person who was basically talking about how he tries to teach his students writing skills and speaking skills and all these other, you know, business skills and such. And certainly there are a lot of things that even if I was running a degree program in system administration, there are a lot of things I would be expecting the students to learn from other parts of the university program. And not trying to integrate directly into, you know, I would want the system administration program to be about teaching them system administration specific knowledge and skills and hopefully theory, but, you know, they should be getting their writing from the writing courses. They should be, you know, maybe it would require them to take some sort of speaking course, but it wouldn't, you know, I would certainly be wanting to use the rest of the university's curriculum to enhance a system administration curriculum. You know, because these things are already well established and, you know, well thought out in other places, why duplicate them in the system administration specific part of the curriculum?
You guys are all kind of nodding. You agree? Disagree? Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's really too focused if you look at just the certification by itself that you have for it. And I think a lot of times too with certification, it's really it can be a double-edged sword that you have for it. I mean, in industry, I remember we had an individual who came from another company to work on a couple things, and he was CCNP that he had. He just got a CCNP, and it was a really very elementary portion thing that he was doing on the Cisco routers itself, and he didn't know how to do it. And so actually, our staff was helping him through it, and it turns out, you know, different things that you have with test killer, test king, all those different things that people look at to go ahead and pass exams. Those are the type of things that you see, and they're learning how to beat the test rather than learning the actual material itself. And so that's, I think that plays an important part of it. We teach information that covers a lot of the different types of stuff you'd have for certification, but just because the student has that certification doesn't mean that they're going to find that class easy or different things that we have. So some of the process that we have is probably similar to a lot of the other universities that do systems administration, is that if you go into network administration and you have your CCNA, it doesn't allow you to go ahead and take the course or waive the course for it. That just allows you to go ahead and sit for the comprehensive final. And if you're able to get 85% or higher on the comprehensive final, well, then that course is not going to be a challenge for you, and we'll go ahead and waive that and move you on to the next one. But I think that's what people need to look at in terms of having where the focus is, and Steve's points in terms of making sure that the student is well-rounded in terms of what you're having for. There's a lot more than the actual certification that you're going to deal with on a day-to-day basis. And if you look strictly at that, I think you're going to be maybe getting yourself into trouble with the organization that's hiring those individuals.
Can I just rant a little bit about certifications too?
A little.
All right, so I just want to tell you a short story. So I was talking with someone who was recruiting and was hiring, and I told him about our master's program, and he said, he listened, and then, so what kind of certifications do they end up with? And I was like, I think a master's degree is a pretty good certification, sir. You know, it's I'm demanding a little bit respect. We teach cool stuff, which is important too. So it's like, they need to understand this as well. You know, degrees have values too.
Yeah.
And you can't just start counting certifications. You know, they might be important in their own right, but you know, a master's of science does count.
Yeah.
That was it.
Alexi?
Hi, Alexi Tololikin. What do you do when your student, in the course of their practical portion of their study, takes a wrong turn? In the traditional model, apprenticeship model, the more senior sysadmin is not too far away and the student can ask questions. And if the senior sysadmin sees that they're going dangerously wrong, you know, depending on the system involved, they might stop him or they might let the system go ahead and crash the system and then learn by recovering it. But here you're handling a lot of students, and when they're doing their practicals, I assume they're doing them all at the same time. So how do you handle that?
So when I do lab classes, and I follow my students pretty closely, at least those students who show up at lab and engage with me, I become like a driving instructor, right? I sit next to them. I kind of see what they're doing. I've kind of seen most errors done 10 times already. So I kind of make a mental adjustment to whether or not I want to stop them or let them, based on how fast I think they can recover.
Got it, but they don't do any kind of external internship.
No, if you mean in terms of like they work for others or we host services and I let them do, I would probably not do that. And also we don't have that kind of involvement.
Got it. Then the other panelists, please.
In terms of looking at that, I think, to kind of reiterate what he was saying, it's, As an instructor, you do become very accustomed to looking for certain types of patterns, and you start to see things. It's amazing. It's like you have ESP sometimes. At about maybe 15 minutes into lab, if a student walks up, you know why they're walking up, and usually what problem that they're dealing with. I would say the other thing that really helps out is that for each of the lab assignments that you have, Carolyn mentioned that there's more than one way to skin a cat. So there's I don't know if you are skinning cats. Hopefully there's not anything like
that
going
biology.
On, but. Yeah, but there's many different ways that you can actually do it, but I think what's important that the student actually understands and is able to see. So many of the students that are in systems administration are very visual that you have. So one thing that we do is that we use, Camtasia or any type of screen recording that we do to actually go through the entire lab that we have for it. We go ahead and of course, give them assessment, try to work with them as they're going through the problems, but then at the end of that, they can always go back and look at that lab, whether if it's right away or maybe 3 weeks later as they go through and kind of work through the different types of steps to see maybe they took a wrong turn here or this is a little bit more efficient doing it this way, like BGP routes or anything else in terms of that you have for it. So that's been fairly successful in terms of what we have. But it really, I think to reiterate, you have to make sure that your numbers don't get too big that you have for it. And if you do get larger, that you have definitely qualified people to do that. I think from a grad program, at least with me, what we've seen a lot is that, in my experience, is that you have somebody, you know, a professor doing the lecture, and then you have somebody else being a TA in the lab, and both hands aren't talking to each other. So they get one thing in the lecture, then they go in the lab, and it's something completely different. And I think that really hurts the student. So I think as doing the administration in terms of setting that up for the curriculum, you really have to make a mental note to say that the professor is also going to be in the lab, or that the TA attends the actual lectures and is able to go ahead and grasp what's going on, so you don't have that discontinuity throughout.
I understand. So I got two answers so far, both about labs. I understood there was some actual practical hands-on work involved in an external, in your program, Guy, mm-hmm. right? Students work outside
Correct.
The course and they get paid.
Yep.
So is that supervised work?
Yep. So like if they're at Los Alamos, they have an advisor that they have for it, and they have certain types of projects that they deal with. So some are day-to-day, but then they also have a cumulative project that's done where they do, and they some of them are presenting here. They present at IEEE conferences, things like that they're evaluated on in terms of doing it. But everything is done, and at the end of it, we as faculty get a report, and that report includes all the individual things that student did, what the advisor thought, things that they were maybe with scripting, maybe we need to work a little bit more on, things like that. And that has really helped shape our curriculum in terms of what we have for it, because even with Microsoft, you know, administration that we deal with, we don't have a heavy emphasis on exchange. And over the last 2 years, we've really changed that to make sure, because we've seen so many come back with that they're really, you know, deficient in those areas. So it's kind of helped with the curriculum as well.
Got it. Sysadmins, because they work on mission-critical systems sometimes, in the course of their career, especially at the beginning of their career, as they learn, sometimes they make mistakes that take down the system.
Since I'm doing an introductory class, I mean, I don't really, certainly for an introductory class, I guess I don't feel like it's appropriate to try to sort of throw students into the deep end and make them run a production service. On the other hand, I try to at least simulate some aspects of that for them, but in a, you know, in an environment where it's safe for them to make mistakes, you know, where it's, if they break something on their system, it's not hurting anybody else, but they can see that how it would be a problem if it was, you know, if that system was being used by other people. This last year when I taught my course, I had these students for their final project, they decided they wanted to do something with configuration management. Cool, great, that's a wonderful project. Well, they just sort of Googled something at random and started installing it, and it turned out they were installing like a virtual machine system, like a virtual machine OS distribution on a physical machine, rebooted it, and it like totally hosed their machine. Their final project sort of turned at that point into just, okay, get your machine back to the state it was in.
That's
you
good.
Your original final project is obviously not gonna happen. I'm gonna give you partial credit for, you know, you didn't meet that goal, but if you can get your machine back to where it was, I'll at least give you partial credit, you know, for that. I just basically try to keep an eye on my students and make sure that I'm accessible for them when it's like, hey, if you're running into a problem, tell me right away and I will come help you. And that depends on not having too many students to work with. I mean, recently I've had roughly 10 to 15 students in each class. The year I had 38, it was a lot of work, although I also didn't have too many problems with that kind of thing that time. But it's basically just giving them, you know, certainly for a lot of educational things, I think work better if you give students a sort of, give them room to make mistakes.
Yeah.
Nice. And then if they do make mistakes, yeah, in fact, like I want them to make a certain number of mistakes because that's how I think they're going to learn from them. You know, learn the most is by, ooh, that's definitely not the way to do that.
Brilliant. Thank you.
So I'm actually one of the three with an actual sysadmin degree. And
oh, yes, he raised his hand.
The first thing I'd say about that, it was nearly impossible to find one.
Where'd you go?
I actually went to a small teaching college outside of Philadelphia called Arcadia.
Okay.
And I looked, you know, when I was looking for a degree, I was like, I want to do system administration. I went to a tech school, and I know what I want to do. And one of the hardest things was the degrees were always buried somewhere in the CS department. And the description was almost identical to the, you know, like operating system design type degrees. And you had to go in, and so I had to literally have two windows open, look at the syllabus for the degree, and then go look up what the course is and read all the course descriptions. It was a really difficult project to try and find, because half the time you go and look, and you look at the descriptions, and you'd end up seeing, you know, OS design buried in, you know, level 400 course for that degree, which it just seemed kind of crazy when, yes, I need to know what works, but I don't need to write my own kernel.
Sounds like that's changing. We're getting some programs that...
Yes, and I mean, this is 10 years ago, 6 years ago.
Oh, okay.
When I was looking. But my question is, what do we do to continue this conversation? You know, we've talked a lot about what you guys are doing now, but as a profession, what do we do to keep this conversation going and from our side help academia design these degrees and keep pushing forward to help define what these sysadmin degrees are and help move it along, because we're the ones out in the field seeing what's, yeah. You know, people coming out of college or not, what they don't have. What can we do to help push it?
I want to put Kira on the spot because we at the education workshop, we kind of talked about how to keep moving forward.
Yeah, so we had a number of ideas, and we definitely need to have more of an ongoing conversation about this topic. I think it's the field of system administration, as I said, I don't think there's a very good identity to what it is. Also, a lot of schools don't know what it entails. And I think there aren't enough interest organizations who are working on this. So I think organizations such as LOPSA, for instance, could play a key role in keeping this going. So when everyone goes back to their own work and so on, and also if you have students like yourself, and I salute you for actually actively wanting to become a sysadmin, because that's really cool. They need.
I thought so.
They could have better help in finding programs near where they live, and also perhaps get in touch with former students there who can make recommendations and so on. I think it's very important. I really don't like when I hear, even though it's a common topic, and I don't get me wrong, but you know, every time I hear, I became a sysadmin because I don't want to do programming, I like get really frustrated because, no, you want to become a sysadmin because it's really cool.
Yeah.
Right? You're missing it. You know, there's someone hasn't told you how awesome it is yet. And, you know, so we need to make sure that we market this right. Right? It's not a second place, right? Because you didn't like programming. So,
question.
Yes.
I'm going to interrupt you because we're getting very close to the end.
Oh, I was getting very emotional. That's what I was
saying. Oh, well, I don't want you to cry. What can these people do? They're obviously interested in this topic. How could they contribute?
So LOPSA is going to have an educators mailing list. I think also there was there's a wiki. And as you know, with all of these things, there needs to be critical mass for it to get rolling. I don't think there are enough educators around to have that critical mass. So we need to have that conversation with practitioners who actually care about this topic and want to help shape that conversation, because it is a very young conversation.
So if you really are interested in this topic, go talk to LOPSA.
Yeah.
Or grab Kira after this.
I don't know about any other interest organizations in the field of sysadmin that care as much about it. So LOPSA is...
Because really, these are just four people here, but there's a lot more people sitting down. And if you really are interested in this topic, I bet there's something you can do to contribute, just what you believe, what you think's important. I'm sure these guys want to hear that, because that's going to make their programs better. Thanks.
Cool.
Thank you.
Hi, John Carota, UC Berkeley, where we use a great deal of student work-study help. Both at our electrical engineering computer science help desk and in residential computing, who actually has a better infrastructure for this. They actually managed to get freshmen to start working for them in very limited positions and have an advancement path for them that carries them on through their senior year, at which point usually they get picked up by someone like Google. Yeah, it happened a lot. But it's working in a university environment, I get a different view of this in that, you know, we have computer science majors. And then we get people like me who are sysadmins. Actually, I'm a burnout. I'm an undergraduate. And one of the things that I've come to learn is that someone asked about the difference between a technical trade degree and a college degree. And the thing that the faculty have tried to push upon me is that when you get a university degree, we're trying to teach you why you're doing the things you're doing. Whereas in a technical school, you may or may not get that. You may understand why a Ford engine does this. You may not understand why a Ford engine does the same thing as a Chevy engine.
So is this a combination? The system administration degree is why and how?
It's both.
Right, certainly.
And which brings me to actually the question I wanted to ask is, One of the things I've learned from watching computer science education over the past 10 years is the emphasis upon abstraction. If you give students the right set of abstractions, they can find a way to piece all the little bits of information they get from practice and theory and put it together into something that they can hang their coat on and understand. And I'm wondering, what are those sets of abstractions that you would need to teach a young student how to become a seasoned sysadmin over the next 10 years?
In 4 minutes or less, what do you got?
Who, me?
Anybody.
Well, this is very hard because I find that system administration is such a multidisciplinary field. But I think if you're looking for one example of someone who tries to create a level of abstraction on service management or great big infrastructures, I think Mark's analytical system administration book tries to do such an effort in that domain. But also, if you look at some of the business domains, like the business of IT management and so on, they also have some abstractions and some terminology which can be valuable. Our job is to bring all of that together and try to make them be able to look this from, you know, different angles and make critical decisions and also ask hard questions. I mean, a typical science major or a person with a degree usually is more critical of stuff because that's how we bring them up. We bring them up not to believe everything they hear. At some point, they will start making decisions on their own. It's very important. And I don't think a trade school necessarily encompasses that in the same way.
Cool. We have one more question.
Yeah. Try to be quick. In any of your programs, are you discussing the vast array of different businesses that your students may enter into? I mean, you can go to somewhere where it has a privately held company has no external requirements, or go somewhere else in like a university or some other government place where you have lots of very different. It's a very different environment. And in the same vein, are you teaching anything like ITIL? Are you mentioning it or bringing it up? Because it's seems to be pretty important, at least once we get out into the business world.
You went to the keynote.
Hey, well, for classes that I teach in particular, that's something that's always an aspect. Programming as a profession, sysadmin as a profession, and I always try for each term to draw in current articles from ACM, Computer Magazine, industry trade magazines, things like that. Also, job postings, like I mentioned Dropbox earlier. Here's what the industry's trying to do right now, and here's just a quick snapshot. So that way it's at least in the field of vision. Formally program-wide, I don't think so for my school, but for me personally, I want a student that leaves my perimeter to at least know, have an idea of what's in front of them. That's me quick, I'll turn over.
The key to doing that successfully, and I agree it's very important, is to actually have practitioners who can come and talk.
Cool. Do you guys have any other soapbox issues you want to bring up at this last couple of seconds here? Is there anything we didn't bring up that you said, dang it, we want to talk about this? I know, I'm just putting them on the spot, didn't I?
I do.
Go ahead. Yes, go.
For the fellow that mentioned the abstractions, that's something I've taken several notes on just while we've been talking here. Many traditional university programs, sciences, engineering, things like that, they have fundamental theories under them. System administration seems to have best practices.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can make a best practice not expire when a technology dies, then we've made a step towards having a fundamental theory. Like I've mentioned, I'm teaching programming classes. I still go all the way back to Pascal programming classes that I took 15 years ago for good examples of data structures, because that hasn't changed. That's part of the fundament of that course. So if I'm teaching system administration, and that upon which I'm teaching, Exchange, for instance, Exchange won't be around forever, well, or maybe it will, but types, things like that, if we say, this is what we teach, is it a best practice, or is it a fundamental theory? When we bridge that divide, we've become an academic discipline rather than a trade that we're teaching in an academic environment.
So. Nice. I think this has been really useful for me, for these guys. Yeah. No, this is great. I think these guys learned a lot today from all your questions. So thank you for asking all these questions and making this very interactive. I want to thank all these guys for sitting up here in the hot lights.
Weren't that hot, really?